And we're holding on Trafalgar from the bays, the fourth line from the end of the medium-sized lines. The line begins bay. We learned in the Mishnah that king has a mitzvah not to have too many horses, and we discussed the details of that yesterday. So the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda Rami. Rav Yehuda pointed out a seeming contradiction between Psukim. Ksiv, one pasuk says, "Vayhi l'Shlomo aboyim elef uvei susim lomer kavdoi." One pasuk says that Shlomo had 40,000 stables for his 40,000 stablefuls of horses for his chariot. Says in Malachim. But then you have a different pasuk. Vayhi l'Shlomo abas alofim uvois uyois. It says in the pasuk susim. Then another pasuk in Divrei Yomim says that he had 4,000 stables of horses. So was it 44,000 or 40,000? Either way, Marsha points out he obviously was over on what we learned yesterday about not having too many horses, because there's no question some of those horses were bottle, some of them were just there in the stables and not being used, which we said is also for a king to do. We're going to talk about in a minute how Shlomo could do such a thing. Anyway, so was it 4,000 or 40,000? Okay, sad. So what does it mean? It's both. If it was 40,000 stables, it's tabloys is similar to the word stables in English. Then each one had within it 4,000 stalls for the horses. In a stable, you have there's the building, a stable, and then in it, you have individual stalls for the horses. So the pasuk may mean that there were 40,000 such buildings, and each one of them had 4,000 stalls in it. Or if it was 4,000 buildings, stables, then each one had in it 40,000 stalls. So either way, it's 4,000 times. Either way, both figures are true. It's 40,000 times 4,000, which would be meaning. In other words, he would have had over 16 million horses. But how they were distributed among the stables? There's two based on the psukim. There are two possible ways of understanding it. So one way or the other, one way or the other, he had 160 million. One way or the other, he had 160 million horses. So the Gemara continues. Rabbi Yitzchok pointed out here's another seeming contradiction in the Psukim about Shlomo's times. Siv ein kesef nechshe b'mei Shlomo. One pasuk says that silver was not counted for anything in Shlomo's times. The Psukim describe over there how everything, all the kalim in his in his palace and in the Beis Mikdash and all were made out of gold. And nothing out of silver, because silver was considered worthless at that time. Uchtiv, but another pasuk says, "Vayitan Shlomo as a kesef Yerushalayim ka'avonim." Another pasuk says that Shlomo made silver in Yerushalayim as common as stones. Now, as common as stones means that it doesn't have very much value, but it has something. Stones are not completely worthless. So, what was it? And the answer is like Kasha, kan kodim shenosa Shlomo as bas parai, kan laacha shenosa Shlomo as bas parai. One is before Shlomo married bas parai, and the other is after. Before he married bas parai, he was completely occupied with the wisdom of Torah. And Marashah points out, since the pasuk says, the pasuk in Mishlei, which Shlomo himself wrote, mentions says that Torah is even more important than silver, then that means silver at that point was worthless. But afterwards, when he married bas parai, then they weren't quite as rich as they were before, and then silver had some value, even though still not very much. Another thing that happened, another difference after Shlomo married bas parai. And by the way, I mean, the Rambam stresses strongly the point that he was megayer her, but nevertheless, it was still a problem, because she not necessarily was she megayer l'shem shamayim. We see that some of his wives, maybe including her, afterwards relapsed to their old ways and were worshiping avodah zarah, and Shlomo didn't prevent them, and Shlomo is held responsible for that, and ultimately that caused the breakup of his kingdom. By with Bas Parai herself, there's a whole medrash that tells about how she played avodah zarah music at his wedding and got him to oversleep, and then caused the avodah and the Beis Mikdash to be late. So basically, she was a bad influence on him. So therefore, after he married her, then certain things changed. And the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, b'shoshen nasa Shlomo as bas parai. When Shlomo married bas parai, yored Gavriel v'natz kana b'yam. Gavriel came down and stuck a stick into the sea. The hail of shirton, and eventually dirt and rocks and everything collected around it. And eventually, the great city of Rome was built on that area, on that landfill that had collected around that stick. So, in other words, the point of the Gemara is that when Shlomo married Bas Para, and that was the first stage in the deterioration of the Jewish people in that time, then that gave power that now Rome could start coming into existence, which eventually destroyed the Bais Mikdash. So in other words, as we Jews are stronger in Torah Avodah, then it takes away power from the Goyim and vice versa. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara mentions, you know, the Yerushalmi mentions other stages in it as well. When Yerovam set up the Egle HaZahav, then that was when the two brothers, Remus and Romulus, who were the founders of Rome, came and built the first two huts over there. And then the Yerushalmi continues when Eliyahu went up to Shemayim, and that was like up until that point, there was still a chance to save the Aseret HaShvatim. After that, not so much. Then that was when the Romans appointed their first king. So we see that their state, even though at the time it was still tiny and unimportant, it was growing in power as things were deteriorating beruchnius among the Jewish people. Further, Rabbi Yitzchak says, "Mipnei malan isgalu taime Torah. Why did Hashem not reveal the reasons for the mitzvahs in the Torah? Most mitzvahs, it doesn't say do this because such and such. So why is that?" Because we see there are two mitzvahs where the Torah does say a reason, and the great person in the world, Shlomo HaMelech, stumbled on them and thought that since the reasons don't apply, then the mitzvahs don't apply. The pasuk says he shouldn't have too many wives, and as we learned yesterday, he has a maximum of 18. And Shlomo figured to himself, because I'm the Chocham Mikol Adam, he figured I'm going to be able to have extra wives, and I won't turn away from Hashem. And it turned out to be it turned out to be not so. Later on, the pasuk actually describes Shlomo himself worshiping Avodah Zarah. Now, the Gemara explains in Shabbos he didn't actually worship Avodah Zarah; his wives did, and he didn't protest. Nevertheless, though, it still distracted him to some extent from being completely focused on Hashem. And even if not, he was still over on the Isser. And similarly, the pasuk says, "Vayhila es ziknas Shlomo noshav hitu es lavava." When Shlomo got old, his wives inclined his heart away from Hashem. So that was one. Uchtiv. Then you have the pasuk says, "Lo yabel es susim." The king should not have too many horses. Va'amar Shlomo ani arba v'loy oshiv. Now Shlomo figured the pasuk says, why should he not have too many horses? Because he's going to cause Jews to return to Egypt, which in those times Egypt was the world center for breeding horses. So Shlomo figured it's fine. The pasuk says only don't do it so you don't return the people to Mitzrayim. I won't. I won't cause people to return to Egypt. We'll arrange all of the breeding and the sale of horses here in Eretz Yisrael. But then the pasuk says, cover Mitzrayim b'sheish v'gomer. Eventually, they had that. Yeah, there were Jews going to Mitzrayim to deal with the horses, and a chariot comes out of there worth 600 shekel. Each horse was selling for 150 individually. So we see that Vatalit came out of Mitzrayim, meaning that Shlomo had agents actually in Mitzrayim arranging for the buying of the horses, which shows that he was eventually that cause that the Isser was violated, so that Jews shouldn't live in Mitzrayim. So we see, therefore, that in those two cases, he ended up violating the mitzvah, thinking that it doesn't apply, and in fact, it does apply. A medrash mentions on it, by the way, that when he did this, one of the letters, the Yud of Layarbe, flew up to Shemayim, flew up to Hashem to complain, Hayitochen, Shlomo is causing me to be removed from the Torah, in effect, because he's ignoring me. And Hashem says, don't you worry, Shlomo is going to be long gone, and you'll still be part of the Torah. The Torah is never changeable. So Taka, why were the reasons given for these two? Maharsha explains, because the two things themselves are mitzvahs. Because after all, that he shouldn't turn away from Hashem itself is a mitzvah, and that he shouldn't cause Jews to live in Mitzrayim is itself a mitzvah. So therefore, so Hashem did reveal the reasons for those, unlike most other mitzvahs, where the reason behind it is not in and of itself a mitzvah. Later, Mefarshim Margolius Hayam points out that, listen, I mean, you know, there are occasionally other mitzvahs where the Torah says a reason for it. The Torah says, sit in a sukkah, l'man yedu deres seichem, for example, and there's a couple of other examples like that. But fine, there, the reason is not going to impinge on the mitzvah. It's a reason in the past, in order that you should know that we sat in sukkahs during the years in the desert. So knowing that reason is not going to say, well, then the reason doesn't apply to me, because the fact is, it's a historical fact. But here we were saying, in order that he shouldn't cause such and such, then Shlomo thought it doesn't apply to him, and unfortunately he was wrong in that. The Gemara continued, okay. So the Mishnah had continued, V'kosev Sefer Torah l'shmoy. The Mishnah had said that one of the rules about a king, he has to write a Sefer Torah for his own name. And we said in the Mishnah that Sefer Torah always accompanies him wherever he goes. So Tana over Vad Shalo Yisnoa B'Shalav Voisav. So Braisa says he can't just beautify himself with the Sefer Torah from his ancestors, meaning, in other words, he may have Yaushin a Sefer Torah from his ancestors, from the previous kings. Nevertheless, he still has to have a Sefer Torah of his own. And the Gemara continues. So the Gemara says, Omar Rovo, Rabba, it says on the side. So Rovo, Rabba says in general, Afa Pishi, Nicholai Avois, Adam, Sefer Torah, even though a person's ancestors left him a Sefer Torah, mitzvah lichtiv mishaloi, he still has a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah of his own. Nowadays, by the way, the post can talk about, does that mitzvah apply to the same way it did now? I mean, nowadays we don't learn directly from a Sefer Torah. So there are posts can will say that maybe the primary mitzvah is that a person should have other sfarim of his own, and some go even further and say the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah may not even apply nowadays. Nevertheless, the Rebbe still started the campaign to have a letter in the Sefer Torah to at least be mekayim it that way. But there are Rishonim who hold that it's not even necessary. But anyway. But in those times where they learned from a Sefer Torah, then that was the mitzvah to do it that way. Shenema, because the pasuk says va'ata kisvelochem es hashira. The pasuk says now write for yourselves the song. So it means the song of Hazinu. But the Rambam explains, since you can't write sections of the Sefer Torah by itself, so therefore it means you have to write the whole Sefer Torah, which includes that shira. Sabaya asks on Rava or Rabba. We just learned v'kos of lo sefer Torah l'shmoy. We said that the king has to write for himself a sefer Torah, shalei yisnoa b'shal acherim, meaning that he can't just glorify himself with the one that was written by others, by his ancestors or whatever, implying melech ein hed yitloy, implying only a king has to have a new sefer Torah of his own. A regular person does not. And the answer is no. Loit stricha l'shtei Torahs. No. What it means is that when the Braisa says that the king is different than a regular person, means as far as two Sefer Torahs. A regular person is yotze the mitzvah if he has one Sefer Torah of his own. Or you have details in it. The Gemara mentions elsewhere a person, for example, if he did yavshin or buy a Sefer Torah and he corrected something in it where there was a mistake, then that's also considered as though he wrote the Sefer Torah, because without it would be possible, etc. But the point is, a regular person is yotze by owning or writing or whatever, one Sefer Torah. A king has to have two. So Bederach Klal, he would yaushin one from his ancestors, and then he'd commission one for himself. But if he doesn't, then he has to have two. V'chidetanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. V'chosavloyes Mishneh v'goymer, the pasuk says he should write for himself the Mishnah Torah Azos, a copy of the Torah. That means kosev l'shmoy shtei Torahs. That means he has to have written for his purpose two Sefer Torahs. Achas she yotzev v'nechneses imoy, one goes in and out with him, meaning it goes with him wherever he goes, as we learned in the Mishnah. V'achas shemunachas le'beveis gnozov, and the other one that he keeps at his treasury. The one that goes in and out with him, the one that accompanies him wherever he goes. How does he do that? The Sefer Torah is a little big to carry around all over the place. How does he do that? He makes it like a kameya, like a little amulet and a miniature size, and he hangs it from his arm. As the pasuk says, I've placed Hashem before me constantly because he's on my right hand, and therefore I won't stumble. So we see, in other words, that there's an inyan that he has Hashem represented by the Sefer Torah on his right hand constantly. This is in parenthesis because the Gemara is going to bring this later and discuss it later, so maybe it's not part of this original Braisa. Anyway, the Braisa says, Mefoshim, by the way, deal with the question. I mean, physically, how is it possible to write a Sefer Torah so small that he'd be able to carry it everywhere he goes? And there are Mefoshim who explain that maybe, in fact, a Sefer Torah for this purpose, maybe it doesn't mean the full Torah, maybe it means a list of the Aseres, and maybe it means the a writing of the Aseres Adibris, or a listing of the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. In some contexts, we find that such a thing is called the Torah. The Braisa continues, he does not go, now we said it accompanies him constantly, but he doesn't go with it into the bathhouse or into the or into the bathroom, because you can't have a Sefer Torah in such a place. Because the pasuk says it should be with him and he should read it, which means it applies only in a place where it's suitable to read from it. So when he goes to such places, then he takes it off and then he puts it back on afterwards when he gets out. Now we said that the words Mishnah Torah Zos mean a second Sefer Torah. So now the Gemara brings that there's another explanation, another meaning of that word Mishnah Torah. We have to realize the word Mishnah can have two different derivations, two different shoshim. It can come from the word Sheni, which means the second one, or Shnei, which means therefore two Sefer Torah, or it can also come from the Shoda Shana, which means to change. So now the Gemara is going to doubt that Mishnah Torah can mean the changed Torah. Now, what does that mean? The Torah is never changeable, Chas v'Shalom. So we're going to see. Originally, the Torah was given to the Jewish people in Ksav Ivri and Loshon Kodesh. Loshon Kodesh, we know what that is. Ksav Ivri, the Gemara is going to identify it soon by another name, is the ancient script that they used to use in the times of the first Beis. They found it in various inscriptions and letters and whatnot from the time of the first Beis Mikdash. It's found on coins from the second Beis Mikdash. As the Gemara is going to go on to say, the Kusim still use a form of it, Adayim. It's a Hebrew alphabet, but it looks a lot different than the one that we use nowadays, which is called Ksav Ashuri. If you search up ancient Hebrew alphabet or whatever, you'll find many examples of it. The letters of it, you have 22 letters in it, just like the 22 letters in our Aleph Beis, but the forms of the letters are much different. Some of them are recognizable as descending ones, as being related one to the other. Some of them are more difficult to see the connection. But anyway, so Marzutra or Ma'ukva is saying that that originally the Torah was given in that script and in Lashon Kodesh. Then later on, the Torah was re-given to them in the times of Ezra, the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, in Ksav Ashuris and the Aramaic language. So the Torah from then on had to be written in Ksav Ashuri, but instead they were going to be learning it in Aramaic. The Jewish people chose for themselves, you know what, we'll start using the new script, the new or new old, we'll talk about soon, we'll use the script of Ksav Ashuri, but we're going to keep Lashon Kodesh. They left for the Hedyotis, the commoners, you can continue to use Ksav Ivri and you can use Aramaic for your Sefer Torah if you want, but we're going to stick with Lashon Kodesh and we're going to rewrite it. We're going to write it from now on in Ksav Ashuri. Man Hedyotis, who are these Hedyotis? Amar of Chisa Kusoi. It means the Kusim, the Kusim, otherwise known as the Shamarinim. They're originally the descendants of people who were brought to Eretz Yisrael by Sancheirev to repopulate it after the Aseres HaShvatim were taken into Golos. Ada Yemazeh, there are some of them living in Shechem and in some other places in Eretz Yisrael, and yet they continue to use the old Ksav Ivri, or a modified version of it, and their Sifrei Torah, such as they are written in a dialect of Lashon Kodesh that has a lot of Aramaic words in it. So that's what it means. My Ksav Ivris, what is this Ksav Ivris? Amar of Chisik Ksav Libuna. It's the script called Libuna. So Rashi describes that it means oversized letters, and Rashi describes the kind that are written in Kameas and Mezuzas. You find in the writings of the Rishonim that there used to be a popular minhag to write in a mezuzah, to write along the sides of a mezuzah, to write various letters in a strange oversized script, almost like magical symbols. The Rambam very, very sharply condemns that. The Rambam says it's one thing to write on the back of a mezuzah. You have the letters over there that correspond to Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Kuzu b'muchzes Kuzu and Shakai on the outside of it. That's fine. At least it's on the outside. But absolutely, the Rambam says don't be writing anything else inside the mezuzah. You're not making it into a kameya for protection. The mezuzah is a mitzvah of Hashem, and you don't tamper with it anyway. But you find in writings of the Rishonim that there used to be a popular minhag to write such things in mezuzahs, which are these strange oversized markings and letters of different kinds. So it actually says ksav lebunah means that. Tosfos brings a different explanation that it means basically like negative writing, like you're putting ink on the paper and leaving spaces where the letters would be. But Tosfos argues that that's not considered writing at all. Then Tosfos says Libunah is the name of a place. Marsha says that Libunah might be named after Lavan, because Lavan after Lavan Harami. So therefore, it may be a script that came originally from Lavan's area of Aram Naharaim. Anyway, so that was the original script we're saying that the Torah was written in. And then later it was changed. Now, how could it be changed? What happened to our Torah? Zoslo Tehei Mochlefes, and Nevi'im can't introduce new changes. So we'll talk about that as we go through the sugya. But first, Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Roy, you want to know how great Ezra was? Roy, Hoya Ezra, Chitinas and Torah Yodai. You should know Ezra would have been great enough that the Torah should have been given to the Jewish people through him. Ilmolin, like Kodmei Moshe, except for the fact that he was preceded by Moshe. He lived 900 years after Moshe, so the Torah had already been given. But if it hadn't been for that, he would have been the one. And how do we see that? But Moshe hu Omer, Moshe Ola Alekim. It says that Moshe went up to Hashem. But Ezra hu Omer, hu Ezra Ola mi Bavel. And by Ezra, it says he went up from Bavel. So the similarity in words teaches us Ma Aliyah Ha'omer Kan Torah, just like when Moshe went up, it was to receive the Torah. The same way, when it says by Ezra that he went up, means that he was receiving the Torah and would have been giving it to the Jewish people. Another example, Moshe describes, he says, Hashem commanded me at that time by Matan Torah to teach you the Chukim and Mishpatim of the Torah. And by Ezra, the Pasuk says, That Ezra had prepared his heart, had prepared his heart, had focused himself, Lidrish as Torah Hashem Alekov, to darshan the Torah of Hashem, Velasis Ulamad B'Yisrael Chok and Mishpat, and to do and to teach among the Jewish people Chok and Mishpat. So again, the similarity in wording means that Ezra is almost like a second Moshe Rabbeinu. The Afa Pishal and Nitna Torah al Yodai. Now, even though the Torah was not actually given through him because it had already been given before that, Nishtana al Yodai Aksav. He did have the schus, though, that the writing, that the script for which Sifrei Torah are written was changed through him. So there was a change that happened in his times, namely the adoption of a new script. Dichtiv, and we find that it was in his times. Dichtiv, as the pasuk describes. So the context of the following pasuk is going to be where the enemies of the Jewish people are writing letters to Kodesh and Achashverosh and Artachshasta to Masa on the Jews and get the building of the second Beis Hamikdash stopped. And the expression in the pasuk is Chsav HaNishtavon, the writing of the Nishtavon, Kosav HaRomis and Mesurgam HaRomis, was written in Aramaic and translated into Aramaic. So we understand that, first of all, Nishtavon, the simple meaning of Nishtavon means like a copy of the letter. But the Gemara is doubting Nishtavon, Meloshin Shona, Meloshin, it was changed. So in his times, this was in Ezra's times, so the script was changed, and even as the pasuk is describing over there, the enemies of the Jewish people are already starting to use that new script, because as we just said, it was a little bit in flux then, who's going to be using the new script, and who's going to be using the old one, and eventually the Kusim decided to stick with the old one, but for the time being, the Kusim were also using this new script as well, and it's called Nishtavan, in the sense that it was changed. And then you have a few years earlier than that, when you have the story of Daniel with the writing on the wall by Belshazzar's party, the expression is Loikal and Ksavid Lamikra, all of Belshazzar and all of his advisors couldn't read the writing on the wall, Ufishra Lahidal Lamalka, and to inform the king of the explanation of it. So now, why couldn't anybody read it? The reason is because it was written in a new script which nobody until then was familiar with. Uchtiv, and you have the pasuk by the king, by a Jewish king. V'chosav leis mishnah Torah azois. The pasuk says he should write for himself the mishnah of this Torah, which means we understand like this. Before we said that mishnah Torah means a second copy of the Torah, but now the braisa is davshining that it means ksav haroy leishtanis. It means a script which is eventually going to be changed. So we see, in other words, that there was a time in Jewish history when that script was changed. Now, so the big question is, how does something in Torah like that get changed? So in fact, the point is, according to this Manda Omer, because the Torah itself implies that eventually there's going to be a change. So in other words, the Torah itself, in the words, Mishnah Torah Azois, is hinting that right now you're using this script, but eventually that's going to change, and therefore that's not considered changing the Torah.
What was the change?
The change was that they went from Ksav Ivri, also known as Ksav Libuna, to Ksav Ashuri. That they went from the ancient Hebrew script, which you look on Wikipedia or whatever, you can find examples of it, versus now they went to Ksav Ashuri. Loma Nikra Ashuris. Why is this script called Ashuris? Sha'ala Imahim Ashur, because it came up with them from Ashur. Ashur and Bavel are adjacent areas in Iraq nowadays. So when they came from Golas Bavel, then they brought that script with them. So now you have, in other words, so shortly before the end of that Golos, the Malach that had written on the wall over there in front of Belshazzar had written in this new script. That was a simon minashamayim. It wasn't just in order to terrify Belshazzar, it was also as a simon for the Jewish people. Eventually, Daniel was brought in to interpret it, and he did, which means it was a simon that now a new script is going to start being used. And now, when they left Bavel and came to Eretz Yisrael, then they brought that script with them, and from then on, that became the script they wrote Sifrei Torah in. From then on, by the way, the old script, Ksav Ivri, became more like a mundane script, sort of like the handwriting script that we use nowadays. And in fact, the Rambam says that's why in the time of the Second Beis Hamikdash, they used it on their coins. They didn't want to use Ksav Ashuri, because coins, after all, sometimes they're in the bathroom and other places like that. You don't want the holy Ksav Ashuri to be there. So therefore, they continued to use the old script on coins and other mundane things like that. Tanya, then we learn in a Braisa, Rebbe Omer, Rebbe says a little differently. This wasn't a new script, but Tchila b'Ksav Zeh Nitna Torah l'Yisrael. Originally, the Torah was given to the Jewish people in the script of Ksav Ashuri, as we have it nowadays. But Kivin Shechotu Yisrael, but when the Jewish people sinned in various times, Nepach Lahem L'Royetz, then the script became for them Royetz. Royetz literally means broken. So in other words, like they lost the ability to read it. In fact, there is the Yerushalmi actually calls Ksav Ivri, gives it another name, Ksav Royetz, a rat. So the Gemara may mean that it was transformed into Royetz. In other words, now they started using this Ksav Royetz instead. The Kivin Shechozru Behen, when the Jewish people did Tshuva in the times of Ezra, Hechziru Elahem, then Hashem restored them the knowledge of that original ancient script of Ksav Ashuri. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Shuvu Levitzorin, return to the fortified place, to Yerushalayim, Asire Atikva, you prisoners of hope. In other words, you've been prisoners in Golos and have been constantly hoping for the Geula and for the Beis Hamikdash to be rebuilt. Gam Hayom, even today, Magid Mishnah, Oshiv Lach, I will restore to you the one who tells you the Mishnah. So in other words, you forgot Mishnah Torah Azos. You forgot, and the script of the Torah was changed. Now I'm going to restore the knowledge of that to you. And according to Rebbe, Loma Nikra Shema Ashuris. So then, why is the script called Ashuris if it didn't originate in Ashur? Shema Usheras Biksav, because it's written very, very clearly in writing. Unlike most other scripts, where some letters might resemble others, Ksav Ashuri, every letter is distinctly different than the other, as long as they're written correctly, and therefore there's no possibility of mixing up and misreading it. So far we have two opinions. One is that the Torah was actually given originally in Ksav Ivri, and then in Daniel and Ezra's times it was changed. The second is that originally it was given in Ksav Ashuri, and then in Ezra's times it was reinforced. It was rediscovered, basically, this old Ksav. Then the Gemara brings a third opinion of Shimon Elazar Oyma, Mishum Rabbi Elazar Ben Parta, Mishum Rabbi Elazar Ben Parta, Sha'omer Mishum Rabbi Elazar Amudoi. No, Ksav Zeh L'Nishtana Kol Iker. The script was never changed. They always wrote Sifrei Torah in Ksav Ashuri. Shenema Vovei Ha'amudim. As the Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes in the Mishkan, the hooks of the pillars, from which you learn, Ma'amudim Lo Nishtanu, Af Vovim Lo Nishtanu. Just like the pillars didn't change, The pillars are always made in the same way. Af vavim, the same way the vavim, the same way the hooks on them never were never changed. And the word vavim means they're shaped like the letter vav. So we see, in other words, that the hooks still, that the letter vav and all the other letters of the aleph base still continue to have the same shape as before. Whereas in Ksav Ivre, if you look for ancient examples of Ksav Ivre, the letter vav looked more like a letter, looked more like a backwards letter F or a letter Y. So and so we see that it wasn't, it looked the same as it was now, which is which where it resembles a hook. Rashi actually doesn't have the words ma vavim lanishtanu af 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 ma vunim lanishtanu. Rashi says it just means, in other words, the very fact that the Torah called these hooks vavim means that they were shaped like a letter vav. Well, then the letter vav had obviously had the same shape as we have it now, where it has, where it looks like a hook.
You have to buy into the letter vav to mean that shape.
The fact that it calls them vav hamudim means that they were.
Why is the calling?
Because the fact that the fact that the hook is called vav means it was shaped like a letter vav.
Well, you're saying, I'm sorry, I don't understand. You're saying that what's called a vav has a shape.
In other words, the fact that the
but
turtle.
You haven't known yet the shape.
The shape,
it with a
the
shape.
shape of a hook is not going to be like the shape of a letter Y or a letter F. It's going to be like the shape of a vav, as we're familiar with it. That's the that's a, that's what a, that's the shape of a hook. So therefore, if the Torah calls them vav, then it means they have the same shape then as they do now. So again, according to Rashi, that's the proof. According to the Girsa we have in front of us, rather, the proof is that it's comparing them to the Amudim, and the Amudim never changed. They were still made in the same way. And you also have a pasuk in the Megillah, that Mordechai wrote to the Jewish people in their script and in their language. Just like the language of the Jewish people didn't change, they still continued to speak and write Lashon Kodesh. The same way says Reb Shimon ben Elazar, the script never changed either. At least for Divrei Kodesh, Reb Shimon Elazar may well agree that they used Ksav Ivri for Divrei Chol, like we see again. They have it on these various inscriptions from the first Beis Hamikdash and on coins from the second Beis Hamikdash. But he's saying, as far as Dvorim Shebekdusha, they always had their special script of Ksav Ashuri. Ela mani makayimus mishnah torah azay. So what about the pasuk? It's mishnah torah, which implies, according to the other chachamim, that the script was changed. Means the shtei torahs is, as we talked about, as far as the king having two sifrei torah, achas sheyotzes v'nichneses imay, one that goes and comes with him wherever he goes, va'achas shemunachas lebeveis gnozav, and the other one that's in his treasuries. Oisa sheyotzes v'nichneses imay, so the one that goes in and out with him. As we said before, Osa Osa Kamin Kameya, he makes it little, he makes it miniature like a Kameya, Batola Bizroya, and he hangs it from his arm and he has it constantly with him. Shinema Shivisi Hashem Lanini Summit, as we quoted the Pasuk before, I placed Hashem before me always, as the Pasuk continues, Kimi Mini Bal Emot, because he's at my right side, and therefore I'll never falter, I'll never stumble. So we see that the Torah is always on his right side, and that would mean, in other words, that he has to be, that that's actually hanging from his right arm constantly. As we talked about before, some Mefoshim say that maybe it was only a listing of the 613 mitzvahs or of the Aseret HaDibros, which contain all the mitzvahs, because otherwise it might be physically impossible to write a Sefer Torah so small. Anyway, so we have three opinions. There's a vast amount of discussion among the Gaonim and the Rishonim and the Achronim about our Gemara over here and about the different opinions. And so forth. There are a lot of very interesting opinions in it. First of all, when we say over here that according to Rebbe, when the Jewish people sinned, then they lost knowledge of Ksav Ashuri, there's an opinion. I think the Radvaz says this, that when they sin, doesn't mean like this we would say, it means at the end of the first Beis Hamikdash or something. No, it actually means already the Chet HaEgel. There's an idea based on Yerushalmi and based on other sources that the first Luchas were written in Ksav Ashuri, and that already the second Luchas were written in Ksav Ivre. We know famously the Bavli tells us in a couple of places that the inside of the Mem and the Samach and the Luchas were hanging there b'derech nes, because a Shloss Mem and a Samach are completely surrounded, and the core of the letter would not be connected to the rest of the stone, so it was hanging there b'derech nes. Meanwhile, there's Yerushalmi that says that there's Yerushalmi that mentions that according to the opinion that the Luchas were written in Ksav Ivre, then the same thing was true of the Ayin, because in Ksav Ivre an Ayin is shaped like a triangle or like a circle, so the same kind of thing. So the Radvaz and different other Rishonim and Achronim talk about different possibilities, including that already the second Luchas were written in Ksav Ivre, and that according to that, the idea would be that yes, the Torah was given, the first Luchas were in Ksav Ashuri, but then after that, Hashem had them, according to the first two opinions anyway, continue to write in Ksav Ivre, even their Sifrei Torahs. The Ksav Ashuri then would be something special that was only known to Yechidis Gula in each generation. So now, later on, when the Malach comes and writes it on the wall in front of Belshazzar, then he, none of neither he nor his advisors know what it's talking about because they're not familiar with that Ksav because it's only known to Yechidis Gula. So they call in Daniel, and he, being one of those Yechidis Gula, is able to interpret it, and then he realizes that this is also a Simon Min HaShemayim, that from now on we should be disseminating the knowledge of the script more widely and start using it in our Sifrei Torah. So, as I said, there's a vast amount of discussion about the ins and outs of this and about the whole historical development of it. So the Gemara continues. V'idach. Now, what are the other Chachamim who disagree and say that Mishnah Torah means that the script of the Torah was changed? How are they? Hi, Shivisi my Dorishbe. So, what are they doing with this pasuk Shivisi Hashem the Negvi Summit, which implies that the king always had a Sefer Torah accompanying him wherever he went? And the answer is Miboyle the Chidra of Chana Bar Bizna. They use it to teach us what Rav Chana Bar Miboyle Chidra of Chana Bar Bizna. They use it to teach us what Rav Chana Bar Bizna says. The Amr of Chana Bar Bizna, Amr of Shimon Chasida. It doesn't refer specifically to the king. When a person davens, he has to picture himself as he has to see himself as though the Shekhinah is directly in front of him. As the pasuk says, I've placed Hashem before me always. So according to that mandamah, that according to those opinions, then the word that pasuk is not telling us anything about the king and his Sefer Torah. It's more generally talking about a Yidu's davening to the Eibishter, which is why you have in many shuls they have a whole plaque that says Shivisi Hashem the Negvi Summit on the shtender for the chazan. What? Say what?
Or
dalif nemiat. Or dalif and different other things like that. Right. So yeah. So that's another thing we can learn from that. And in fact, in Halacha, we have, for example, the reason why at the end of Shemona Esrei do we bow first to the left? When it comes to the end of Kaddish, for example, we bow first to the right. The Gemara explains elsewhere, because since you're standing in front of the Shechina, therefore you're bowing first to the Shechina's right, which is going to be your left. Okay. The Gemara says, now, according to Reb Shimon, who says the script was never changed, well, then why couldn't Belshazzar and his advisors read the writing on the wall? If the script was never changed, if everybody always knew of Ksav Ashuri, then what was so strange about it? And the answer is, So the Gemara gives a few answers. It was written for them in gematria. Now, gematria we usually think of meaning the numerical values of the words, but gematria more generally can mean any kind of transformations of letters. So in this case, Rav says it means it was written in atbash. So each letter was replaced by the corresponding thing in atbash. So it said yatas adach ughamat. My parish, no, they couldn't understand what that meant, and therefore they were all scared. My parish lahu, so when Daniel comes, he explains to them that it stands for Mene Tekelu Parasin. The Yud corresponds to the Mem, because Yud is the 10th letter, and Mem is the 10th letter from the end of the Aleph Beis. The ninth letter, and Nun is the ninth from the end, and so forth. That's how Atbash works. So he explains to them, Mene means Menor, as it says in the Pasuk, Mene, Menor, Lakoma, Chusach, Vahashlamaslach, or Vahashlamach. Hashem has counted up, he says to Belshazzar, Hashem has counted up your kingship and decided it's an end to it. We know Belshazzar had taken out and thought the 70 years of Golas Bavel are over. He took out the Caleb of the Bais HaMikdash and used them at his party. So now Daniel says, you know, you miscounted. Hashem instead has counted and decided your kingdom is up. That's Mene. The why he says Mene twice, Mephoshim say, means you counted and you thought Golas Bava was over, but Hashem counted and said that your counting is wrong. To kill, the next word is to kill, where it means we weighed, means to kill to chasir. You've been weighed in the balance and you've been found wanting. You're lacking in the chosim that would save you. Parasin, or ufarasin, it says in the pasuk, and parasin means prisas malchusach, means Hashem is saying your kingdom is going to be divided up. V'yihivas l'modei uforas, and it's going to be given over to modei uporas. Which, in fact, that night they killed Belshazzar and took over the kingdom. He was the king of Babel. He was the king of Babel. He was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar.
Modei and Paras were not in Babel.
Modei and Paras are kingdoms near Babel. So Nebuchadnezzar had been Moshe B'kippah. He had ruled over the entire known world, including Poras Amadai. By this time, by Belshazzar's times, Poras Amadai are vassals of his, but they're semi-independent. And at this point they were working on conquering Babel. And that night they actually conquered Babel and killed Belshazzar and took over. So the point is, in other words, that, so again, according to the first two mandamos, the Belshazzar and company couldn't read it. It was written straight out, Mene Mene, Tekel Parasin, but it was written in Ksav Ashuri, and they didn't know that script. Here, Rav is saying it was written in Ksav Ashuri, and they did know the script, but they're seeing these meaningless, these seemingly meaningless words, Yatas, Yatas, etc., and they couldn't figure it out. Ushmul Amar. Shmuel says another way, yes, it was written in, yes, the letters they could read, but they couldn't read it because it was written, Mimtas Ninkfi A'alaren. What the Malach did is he wrote it, instead of, there's 15 letters over here, Mene Mene Tekelu Parasin. Instead of writing it across, he wrote it downwards. So for example, the word Mene is written Mem, then underneath it the Nun, then underneath it the Aleph, then again Mem, Nun, Aleph, going from top to bottom, and so forth. So it comes out, written, if you read it across, it's three meaningless words, and therefore they couldn't understand it. Malach writes it. Yeah, in fact, there are Mephoshim who explain. Now, if it was written in a rectangle 3x5, somebody might have eventually figured it out. But the point is, some Mephoshim say that actually he wrote it in one straight line like that, Mimtas Ninkafi Alaren. So Daniel has to explain to them, you have to take the first letter of each, you have to take the first and fourth and seventh and so forth, and the second and fifth and eighth and so forth, and then you'll understand the message. Rabbi Yochanan says another way that it was disguised, anam anam lakat nisrafu. What the Malach did is he wrote each word backwards. So instead of mene, in mem nun aleph, it's aleph nun mem. And the same thing with each of the other words, and therefore it was backwards and they couldn't understand. Rav Ashi Omar, nama nama katal person. Rav Ashi says what the Malach did is he switched around the first two letters of each word. So yielding this, nama nama, katal person. Again, the point is that prevented people from understanding it. Ben Yehoyada says,
then you need Daniel to come.
Ben Yehoyada says, actually, the Malach may have written it in all four ways. The Malach may have written it one after the other in all these four ways, and therefore they really don't know what's going on over here.
Let me ask you, what would be the accomplishment that they put Daniel into a picture for the Jewish people? Wouldn't that accomplish?
Would have accomplished Daniel being in the king's palace. It means that he's able to, I mean, it means, first of all, he's able to be an example of living as a Yid, even in the palace, and not assimilating. And he in fact, we'll learn in Masechet Avodah Zarah later this year, Be'ez Hashem, that he made important gzeiros to prevent assimilation in his time. So yeah, but in this case also, it means that he was greatly honored by Belshazzar, and afterwards he was very much honored by Daryavish and Kodesh as well, yeah. Okay, the Mishnah says, continuing with the halachas of a king, Ein Reuchvin al Susay, you're not allowed to ride on the king's horse, Ein Yoshvin al Kisay, you're not allowed to sit on his throne, Ein Mishtamshin b'shavitay, and you're not allowed to use his royal scepter. The Ein Royan Osekrum Stapir, you're not allowed to see the king when he's getting a haircut, V'loikru Orum, or when he's naked, V'loikru B'Veis HaMerchatz, or when he's in the bathhouse. Now, of course, people are naked in the bathhouse. Malachas Shloima on the Mishnah explains that in other words, even you would think in the bathhouse, everybody's naked. Maybe there's not a problem, but you're still not allowed to. Shenema, because the pasuk is Soyim Tosim Alecha Melech, you should place upon yourselves a king, means Shetehei Moser Alecha, the fear of the king, the respect of the king, always has to be on you. And if you don't, and if you see him under those conditions, then you won't have as much respect for him. One point Rashi mentions elsewhere is Soyim Tosim means place, you should place, means every time if the king wants to forego his covered, for example, you have a responsibility to replace him as king over you, meaning to not allow him to forego his covered and to still have a constant respect for him.
This is redundant. You cannot see him when he's taking a haircut. You cannot see him naked.
No, because a haircut puts not naked when they get a haircut. They're two different things.
Now that one he can do alone, one he can't.
The haircut, okay, you would say maybe the barber has to like keep him covered as much as possible and only uncover the parts of his head that he needs to shave. But the naked means exactly that. In other words, people can't see him undressed, and then also not in the bathhouse, even though everybody there is undressed. So the Gemara gives an example. Now, we said in the Mishnah, he can't use his scepter. Now, that means not just the king's scepter, but other personal effects of his. So the Gemara is going to give an example of this involving Avishag HaShunamis. Now, the story is like this. The pasuk tells us at the beginning of Divrei Hayamim, there was a time that late in David's life, he's very old, he's cold, he can't warm up. So his advisors say, let's get a girl for you, a Nara Bisula, and she'll lie together with you, and her body heat will warm you up. So they find a girl, Avishag HaShunamis, and she becomes David's personal attendant, and she does this service for him. Then the pasuk says afterwards, it describes how Adoniyahu tried to make himself king and eventually was foiled because Bathsheba found out, Nosson Anovi found out what's going on. He told Bathsheba, he and Nosson come to David and tell him, wait, Shlomo is supposed to be the king. And David gives immediate orders that Shlomo should be anointed as king. So Shlomo is king. Later on, the Pesukim describe, and it's still in Melachim Aleph, Perek Beis, Adoniyahu comes to Bathsheba one day, and he asks her, can you ask Shlomo, I'd like to marry Avishag? And Bathsheba sees nothing wrong with it. After all, David hadn't married her before we learned that, and you're not allowed to marry a king's almana. But fine, she's not an almana. The pasuk says David never had relations with her. So therefore, Adoniyahu figures she's fair game for him. Bathsheba goes to ask Shlomo, and Shlomo realizes the implications of it. Fine, Avishag is not David's wife. However, she's like David's shayvit. She's like a scepter, like a personal attendant. So for Adoniyahu to try to marry her is in effect like to try to usurp some part of the kingship. And so Shlomo realizes the danger, and it shows that Adoniyahu still has ideas of getting the kingship for himself, and so Shlomo has him executed as a murder malchus. So the Gemara says, Avishag muteres l'Shlomo v'asur l'Adoniyah. As a matter of fact, as halacha, Avishag would have been mutter to Shlomo. If he had wanted to marry her, then he would have been able to, but she's also to Adoniyah. Muteris to Shlomo de Melachoya. Shlomo is a king, or Melach Mishtamish, Bishavita Shalmelach. A king can use a scepter that belonged to the previous king. Now, we learned at the beginning of the Perek, a king can't marry an almona of another king. And in any case, if she had been married to David, then she would have been also to Shlomo because she was his father's wife. She'd be an erva to him. But like this, where Shlomo didn't have relations with her, Shlomo would have been perfectly entitled. But Adoniyah not. Vasudal Adoniyah dehedya too. After all, Adoniyah, as much as he's a member of the royal family, is still not the king. In halacha, there's no difference between a crown prince or any other prince or anybody else. They're all considered hedyotis. And then therefore, Adoniyah, she'd be off limits to Adoniyah.
Question.
Yes. Yeah. What's the question?
Where did we see that Shlomo did take Avishag?
We don't. We're saying she could have if he wanted to. He would have been mutter to marry her had he wanted to. But when Adoniyah asks to marry her, it shows that it makes him a murdered b'malchus. So Avishag Maihi, what's the story with Avishag? Dichtiv, Sefer Melachim begins, V'amelach David Zokin Baba Yom V'gomer. David was old, King David was old, he had come into days V'gomer. And the pasuk says that they tried to. He was old and cold, and he couldn't get warm. By chasub abgodim, they tried to cover him with clothes, and he wouldn't. The Gemara in Brachos mentions two reasons behind it. It's not just Sam that he was old, but anyway, the point is by yomer le'avod of yivakshuvagim. So his servants suggest to him, let's find a girl, and she can warm you up with her body heat. Ochtiv, and sure enough, the pasuk says by yivakshu na'ar yofivagim. They looked and they found a beautiful girl. Oh, they looked for a beautiful girl, and they found Avishag. Uchtiv, and the pasuk says, "Vanara yofad ma'od." The girl was very beautiful. Vatila melach sechenes. He was a warmer for the king. Sechen comes from a shodesh in Loshon Kodesh, that means to warm up. Vatashodesehu, and she served him. So the Gemara picks up the story from there. Omra, she says to David, "Ninsavan, why don't you marry me?" Now, Rashi explains on the pasuk, Pshutah Shal Mikra, as David didn't, because as a besula, she would have more body heat. But the Gemara doesn't seem to be accepting that. The Gemara is assuming that she would have the same body heat either way. So marry me. Omra la, seriously. He says, you're also to me. I already have 18 wives. And as we learned before, that's the maximum for a king. Omra la, she says, you're fafruming zich. Chasri le ganva, when a thief. And it's like they say, when a thief has no ability to steal, nafshi nokit b'shloma, then he put nafshi l'shloma nokit, then he pretends like he's a peaceful guy. So in other words, she's saying it's not because you have too many wives. It's because you're old and you don't have gvuras anoshim anymore. You don't have the ability to, and therefore you're fafruming zich and pretending like it's because you can't lahalocha. But we know that it's not that. How does she speak with such chutzpah to David HaMelech? We'll get back to that point in a second. Omelahu. So David says, you know what? I'll show you that's wrong. As the pasuk says, Kiru li l'Bathsheba, call Bathsheba to me. Uchtiv, v'tove Bathsheba al HaMelech HaChadra. The pasuk says, Bathsheba came to the king's chamber. Now, the context of the pasuk is, again, where Adonijah is trying to set himself up as king, and Bathsheba comes to David to inform him what's going on and to remind him that he had promised that Shlomo, her son, is going to be king. But the Gemara is understanding that also she came, that David had summoned her for the purpose of having relations with her. And Omer of Yehuda Omer Abba, Oysa Shah, Kincha Bathsheba, Bishloshes Yemapis. Afterwards, Bathsheba had to wipe herself with 13 cloths, in other words, that David still had, very much had, Vuras Anoshim, and is able to have relations with her, so much that it took her all that to clean herself up with. So in other words, he showed that Avishag is wrong, and he still has that power, and the fact that he's not marrying Avishag is, in fact, because he's also true in Halacha. Where do we get 13? Rashi says the pasuk that describes Bathsheba coming has 13 words in it. Vatovai Bathsheba el hamelach achadra, v'hamelach zokin ma'od, v'avishag ashunamis mishoras es hamelach. Now, if you count it, it's 14 words. A number of mafoshim say, you see from this, that Bathsheba is supposed to be written as one word. La halacha, we don't do that, but nevertheless, there is that idea. Okay. Now, what does Bathsheba, what does Avishag mean by this, talking with such chutzpah to the king? So the Aruch HaNeir gives an interesting idea about it. He says that, David many years ago had stumbled in the matter of Bathsheba and married her when he wasn't supposed to yet, before he had the whole thing with Uriah and her and everything. So now, for the rest of his life, David is doing tshuva for it. One form of tshuva, the highest form of tshuva, is when a person is in the exact same situation and he doesn't do the Aveda. Now, a regular person should not try to put himself in such a situation. You never know, he might succumb. But David was on a high enough level that he could actually try that. So he's, over the years, he's doing that. He's making sure that he has lots of opportunities to be over on his surim involving wives, involving women, and he doesn't. So now, and this is why, so now he has, why the Aruch HaNeir says, why after all does Avishag have to be beautiful? To warm him up, she could just as well be a plain-looking girl. The vort is, this is all part of David's tshuva. But now Avishag is telling him, listen, you're old anyway. You don't have that koyach anymore anyhow. So what good does it do you? This tshuva is not accomplishing. This method you're using anymore is not accomplishing anything as far as a method of tshuva. So David shows to her, no, you're wrong. I still have very much the power, the ability to, and the fact that I'm not marrying you is all part of my tshuva to be mechaper, to do tshuva for what I did with Bathsheba all those years ago. Ben Yehoyada adds also, that's why she uses the metaphor of a ganav. She's saying you're trying to sneak something past the Yetzirah, but it doesn't really work when you don't have the koyach. And David shows her, yes, I very much have the koyach, and it's just the reason I'm not doing it is because of the iser. We talked about yesterday, by the way, there's a machlokas of the Rambam and the Ravid, whether when we say a king has a maximum of 18 wives, does it mean the 18 includes wives and pilagshim, or is he allowed 18 wives and they can have as many pilagshim as he wants? Now, all Gemara seems to be a proof for the Rambam, because otherwise, why doesn't he take her as a Pilagish? Mefoshim say that a counter-argument to that could be Avishag didn't want to be a Pilagish. She wants to be a full wife or nothing. And then, therefore, he can't, because he already has 18 wives. So the Gemara continues, Omer of Shaman Ba'aba, Boy Re'e Kamakoshin Gerushin. Come and see how hard it is to divorce. We see that David was given a special heter to be in Yichud. Now, we learned yesterday, after the whole story of Amnon and Tamar, the Beis Din of that time, David's Beis Din, had made a gzera about Yichud Pnuya. Never relent, never again is a Jewish man allowed to be alone with a Jewish woman, even if they're not married, even if she's not married, and even though there's no Issur Erva involved. But here, David has Avishag privately with him, even in his bed, and they allowed it, but they didn't allow him to divorce one of his 18 wives in order to be able to marry Avishag. So we see how hard divorce is. Amar Rabbi Eliezer says in this connection, a man divorces his first wife after the Mizbeach murdered all of Demois. Even the Mizbeach sheds tears for him. Shenemah, as we find a pasuk, V'zois shenis tasu, the Novi Malachi says to the Jewish people, this is the second thing that you're doing wrong. The first one was that they're degrading the Mizbeach by bringing on an unsuitable korbanos. And then he says, here's another thing that you're doing. Actually, he mentions also there was a problem with intermarriage over there. And then a second thing you're doing, Kasois Dimas Mizbach Hashem, you're covering the Mizbeach of Hashem with tears, Bechiva Anoka, with crying and with moaning, Me'ein Oid Pnoi Salam Mincha, to the point where Hashem doesn't want to turn anymore and accept your Mincha, V'lakachas Rotzin Miyedchem, or to accept any favorable korbanos from you. Uchtiv, and the next passage continues, V'amartem Alma, you're saying, why? What are we doing wrong? And the reason is, Alki Hashem Heid Beincha Uvein Eishes Nurecha, Hashem is testifying about what's going on between you and the wife of your youth. Asher ata bagad taba, where you've been disloyal to her and you've divorced her. V'hi chaver techo v'eshes b'risecha, and she's supposed to be your companion and the wife of your covenant. In other words, and you just divorced her without a good reason. There was a whole thing at that time. The Medrash explains that when the Jewish people came to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis Hamikdash, the women they brought their wives with them, but many of the women, because of the troubles of the journey and afterwards, with the troubles of resettling Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael, they lost their good looks. So some of the Jewish men then were going and being attracted to the local Goyish women and marrying them. Some of them were going and divorcing their Jewish wives, and the women are coming to the Mizbeach over there and crying and saying, what do we do wrong that we deserve to be, that we should deserve to be treated that way by our husbands? So Hashem is standing up for them and saying, yes, you husbands are acting very wrongly in this, first of all, in intermarrying with Goytis, and second of all, in treating your Jewish wife, your first wife, in such a way. So we see that the Mizbeach itself cries for such a thing. What's the idea? Marshall says, because like this way, as long as a woman is married, she's going to be bringing korbanos on the mizbeach every so often. When she gives birth, for example, there's going to be korbanos brought on the mizbeach. Now, when she's divorced, then she's not going to, and therefore, like the mizbeach is crying because, so to speak, it has less on it. The Rebbe comments in a sicha, actually, that's not really a full answer. After all, there's such a thing as kayitz on mizbeach. They have korbanos that are dafka being brought on the mizbeach when there's no other korbanos being brought. So it's not like the mizbeach is ever empty. So rather, the Rebbe gives a whole explanation that the Mizbeach itself represents the reconciliation between the Jewish people and Hashem. Even we do Averis, the Mizbeach is Mechaper and Mezin and Mechabev and so forth, and therefore divorce represents, goes against the whole Mitzios of what the Mizbeach is about, and therefore the Mizbeach cries for it. The Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, V'itei Rabbi Elazar, Ein Ishta Shel Adam Mesa, Elim Kin Mevakshim Menem Mamon Ve'ein Loi. A man's wife dies only if he's being demanded money of him, like for to pay off a neder that he made, and he doesn't pay off the neder. Shenema, as the pasuk says, you shouldn't make a neder, and v'im ein l'chol shalom, if you don't have what to pay, lama yikach mishkov chamitachtecha, why should Hashem take away your lying one from under you, meaning your wife with whom you lie? So in other words, the point is, when a person pledged for tzedakah, for example, or for a neder for tzedakah, and he doesn't pay it off, then Hashem may punish him by taking away his wife. And the Gemara continues, V'omer Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Adam Shemesa Ishta Rishona, when a man's first wife dies, Kilo Chorav Beis Hamikdash B'yomav. It's as if the Beis Hamikdash had been destroyed in his times. Shenema, we find in Yechezkel, Hashem tells him, Ben Adam, which is Hashem's nickname for Yechezkel throughout the Sefer, Hinin Lekeach Memcha Es Machmarei Necha B'magefa, behold, I'm going to take away the beloved one of your eyes, your wife, whom Yechezkel loved very much. I'm going to take her away from you in a plague. Loi Sifba, and Hashem tells him, you're not going to mourn for her. V'loi Sivka, you're not going to cry. V'loi Savei Dimasecha, you shouldn't even shed tears. The point is, the Pasuk goes on to say, that when people are going to ask him why not, he's going to explain, as the Gemara is going to quote the pasuk over here, he's going to tell them this is going to be an example for you of how it's going to be when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. It's going to be an enormous tragedy, but nobody is going to be mourning and crying, because what's the point of mourning when a person's relative has passed away, or he had a disaster or whatever? For one thing, is that other people should commiserate with him. Well, at the time of this, at the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, everybody's going to be in the same tzara. So there's no sense praving avelos for it when everybody feels the same way. So he says, Hashem tells him, you're going to publicly not prava avelos for your wife, and everybody will take a lesson from you of how it's going to be, and maybe they'll do tshuva, and therefore there won't have to be a korban. Uchtiv, the pasuk continues, V'adaber la'om ba'boker, Yechezkel says, I spoke to the people in the morning, told them what's going to happen. V'atomas ishti ba'orev, sure enough, my wife passed away that evening. Uchtiv, and then he wasn't praving avelus, and everybody's wondering why, and he tells them, Hinini mechalas mikdoshi, behold, I'm going to desecrate my Beis Hamikdash. Go'in uzchem, the pride of your strength. Machmar aneichem, the beloved thing of your eyes. So we see that the first wife of Yechezkel, when she dies, is compared to the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Alexander, we call Onam Shemesa Ishta Biyamav, any man whose wife dies during his lifetime, Olam Choshach Badre, the world is dark for him. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Ur Choshach Ba'olai, the light is dark in his tent, and Olai means his wife, as we find in various places. So Olai Bishvil Ishta, she says, Ein Olai Al Ishta. So Ur Choshach, his light is dark, Ba'olai, because of his wife. The Nero, all of Yiddach, and his candles sputtering out when he's there. So in other words, we see that he loses a certain light when his wife is gone. Rabbi Yosef Bachanina Amar Psi Osef Mitzkatsuis. Rabbi Yosef Bachanina says, in addition, also his steps become shorter. He's not able to walk as strongly as before because he's so weak and feeling such tsar now. Shenemar, as the next pasuk continues, the next pasuk continues, Yetzru Tzadei Oinoi, the steps of his strength are going to be narrow, which means, in other words, so like this, before he was able to take wide steps because he's strong, now he feels weaker. Rabbi Bohu says also his counsel, his advice falls away. In other words, he's not able to accomplish the things that he planned. Shenema, because the same pasuk continues. His etza, his counsel, his advice is throws him away. In other words, like he comes up with ideas, but he can't actually bring them into fruition because he doesn't have his wife anymore. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Babachona, Amar Biechanan, Koshal Zavgam Kriyas Yamsuf. To begin with, making a shidduch, to bring together a man, a particular man and woman, is as difficult, so to speak, as Kriyas Yamsuf. Shenema, as the positive, is a greater ness, in other words, as Kriyas Yamsuf. Shenema, the Kim Moshe Vichidim Baisa, the positive is Hashem settles individuals into a household. Motzi Asidim Bakoshores, Hashem brings out the prisoners in Koshores. One thing, Koshores, the simple meaning of kasharis means something like chains, but it also means, the Gemara elsewhere explains, that it means in a suitable season. Hashem brought the Jewish people out in the springtime, which is a comfortable season to travel. So first of all, tikkun motzi asirim, al motzi asirim. So don't read, Hashem brings out the prisoners, but like the bringing the yichidim into a household is kim motzi asirim, is like when Hashem brings out the prisoners, yitzias mitzrayim, al tikkun b'kasharis al b'chi v'shiris. And the word b'kasharis, we darshan, is b'chi v'shiris, crying and singing, which is referring to Kriyas Yamsuf, where the Jewish people were, where there were cries, and there was also singing because they sang the Shira, but there were cries before that about what's going to happen, that we're afraid of the Mitzrayim and whatever. So therefore, we see that there's a comparison between Moshe Vichidim Baisa and the whole events of Yitzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf. So the Gemara says, Eini, is that so? So you're telling me it's so hard to pair up a man and woman? 40 days before a child is formed, meaning when the child is first conceived, because it takes 40 days for the embryo to form to the point where it's considered a baby in halacha. Basko yotzes v'emeres, Basko comes out and announces, Bas Pliny, the Pliny, the daughter of Pliny is going to marry Pliny. So we see that it's already bashert before they were even born, when they were first conceived. By the way, why the expression Bas Pliny? There's a cute idea about it, because generally a wife is usually younger than her, a Kala is usually younger than her Chosin. So when the Chosin is conceived, the wife has usually not even conceived yet, so therefore all you can say is Bas Pliny. Anyway, so you see that it's Bashert long before, and the answer is like Kasha, Hob Zivug Rishin, Hob Zivug Sheni. There's a difference between a first marriage and a second marriage. The first one is Bashert before they're born. The second one Hashem has to decide based on their Meisin, as it says at the beginning of Sota, and that's Koshik Kriyas Yamsuf. There's a lot of discussion about that, including that Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni doesn't necessarily mean a person's actual first marriage and second marriage. Sometimes it can be, in other words, that the Fakeret person has their Basherta and they're not Zoicha to find them first. So therefore, like Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni would mean the first choice, the one that was Basheret for him, versus the second, like the backup choice, the one that he ends up marrying. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that a person might miss out on marrying his Basherta. And there's a lot of can refer to matters involving Gilgulim, and there's a lot of other details within that. Continuing on the topic of a first wife and how important it is, the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman, l'kol yesh tmura chutz me'eshes ne'urim. Anything in life has a substitute except for a wife of one's youth. And there's no substitute for that if she passes away. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ve'eshes ne'urim kisi mois." A wife of youth, how could she be rejected? So in other words, Hashem is saying to the Jewish people that, listen, even a person rejects, a person doesn't like his first wife, but nevertheless, even if he wants to be away from her for a while, he still reconciles with her eventually, the same way Hashem is saying that, because there's no substitute for her, the same way I will never substitute you with another nation. The Gemara continues, Master, that Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yitzchak Brei, Rabbi Yehuda taught his son Rabbi Yitzchak a similar idea. A man really finds full satisfaction only with his first wife. Again, because she's his basherta, she's half of his neshama, etc. Tosfos, by the way, points out when we're saying a boimim can be serious of lot, nevertheless, you can still have that that tefillah, for example, can change the matter. And we're saying over here that in halacha, for example, you're allowed to get engaged on any day of the year, even Tisha B'Av, because Shema Yikad Menuachah. So we see that even though it was Basherta, nevertheless, tefillah can still change it. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying a man finds real satisfaction only with his first wife. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yehi Mekorcha Baruch, may your wellspring be blessed. Usmach Me'eshes Nurecha, and be happy with the wife of your youth. Omer Loi, so Rabbi Yitzchak, the son, asks Goin Man, where is an example of that? Omer Loi, and Rabbi Yehuda tells him, Goin Imcha, for example, your mother. I'm very satisfied with her. She's my first wife, and that's an example of that. So the Gemara says, "Any is that so?" The same Rabbi Yehuda teaches his son Rabbi Yitzchak when the pasuk says in Kehelas, "Umoitzani marmi mavas seisha ashehim etzodim b'charamim." I find more bitter than death a wife who snares and traps. V'omalek goin man. Rabbi Yitzchak asks him, "Where is an example?" V'omalek goin imcha. And Rabbi Yehuda says like your mother. So we see he didn't get along with her so well. And the answer is, Mit kaftkifa. She was very harsh. She would get angry very easily. Iburim abra b'mila, but she was more willing to be maver amidosav and noyach lutzis. She's more easy to calm down and to feel better afterwards. So yes, it could be very hard when there's an argument between them because she's very easy. She's very short tempered, but afterwards she was also very easy to appease. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, on balance, then he has nachas ruach and he has kodas ruach with her. How is this not lashon hara? So there's a few possibilities in it, but one very, very interesting explanation, I think, from Ben Yehoyada is actually that what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is she has a natural tendency, she has a natural disposition to be very short tempered, but she's worked on it over the years to calm herself down and not to become angry so easily. So therefore Rabbi Yehuda is saying the way she was originally, yes, motzani mami mavas, but the way she's worked on herself over the years, it's a shvach for her, or smach me'eshes nurecha. Look how hard she's worked to transform her midas, and therefore now I have kodas ruach with her. There's a famous verse that's brought from the Balei Amusar, I think from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that says it's easier to learn the entire shas than to transform one midah, one of one's own midas. And we see, therefore, according to that, then Rabbi Yehuda is saying that she was able to accomplish that.
I don't understand what it means to transform even the... Kass to what?
It means, in other words, that she trained herself to not be a balas kass. In other words,
it was
originally, but then
just that she was easy.
So that's according to the simple explanation of the Gemara. That's what it means. She retained her midah of kass. She was easy to appease as well. Like you have in Pirkei Avos, noyach lichos, right? Which we haven't picked up. One second. Right. Hold on. There's two different explanations over here. The straightforward explanation is that she continued to have that midah of kass. She just also had the midah of being noyach lutzis. Where we have, after all, in Pirkei Avos, you know, you have arba midas. You have arba midas v'deis noyach lutzis v'noyach lerotzis. The Alter Rebbe's gear says yotzeh hefseid b'schorei. You lose out, but you gain more from the fact because you're easily appeased. So in that case, then that's her mila. The other explanation, as I said, I think from Ben Yehoyada, is that no, it means she actually transformed herself to not be a balas kass altogether. So not that she still gets angry, but she's easily appeased, but rather that she worked on that midah over the years and now made herself. Okay, the Gemara continues. Omnav shmoba unya mishmeid rab isha goylam hi. A woman is like an unformed vessel before she's married. The ena kodesis bris elamisha asar kli. She makes a covenant, like she has a certain special emotional attachment, only to the one who made her a keli. In other words, when she first has relations and breaks her besulim, then at that point she becomes a keli suitable to have children. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki vayalayich oisayich, the one who was vayalayich, meloshen bal, who so to speak, your husband had relations with you, is the one who made you. Hashem tzvokas shmoi, his name is Hashem tzvokas. So we can see that the husband, so to speak, makes the wife and finishes her into a keli. And she has a special krisas bris, a special emotional attachment to him. The Tana, we learn in a brisa, ein ish meis elol ishto, vein isha meis elol baila. A man truly dies only to his wife, meaning of all the people who are sad and who lose out when he passes away, his wife feels it most of all. Vein isha meis elol baila, and when a wife passes away, it's her husband who feels it the most. The pasuk says in Rus, Elimelech, the husband of Nami, died. Now we know that Elimelech is the husband of Nami, so. The point is that she was the most affected by it. Vein isha meis elo baila shenema, as you have in this week's parasha. Yaakov says, "Vani bevoyi mipadan." When I was coming from Padan, meisa olai Rachel. Rachel died on me. In other words, on me. It was on me. It hit me harder than anybody else.
He had other wives,
but nevertheless, she was still, and she wasn't even Eshes Neurim because he didn't marry her first. He married Leah first. Nevertheless, we're saying that her death hit him harder than it does anybody else. And remember, he's talking to Yosef. Yosef is her son. You know, so Yosef lost his mother at age 9 years old, and nevertheless, Yaakov is telling him it still had a greater effect on me even than it did on you. So, Mausha says we are primarily talking about a first wife. And as far as Yaakov and Rachel, he says, listen, it's true. He actually ended up marrying Leah first, but after all, she was Ikri Shabayas. She was his main wife. He worked for Lavan to begin with, only for her hand. So therefore, in that sense, she can still be considered Ishti Rishayna.
And besides, she stole Leah's thunder because she got married after Sheva Brachim.
Well, fine, but that was that. Okay, whatever. Yeah. Okay. Fine. I guess we'll continue tomorrow. Best Hashem. It's getting late.